Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone's The Family Jensen, Number 2, Helltown Massacre. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by Thomas Penny, James Lewis, Mort Shelby, Michael John Casey, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Graybill, Tim Carlin, James Konacek, David Coyne, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, Terrence Aselford, Joel David Santner, Ken Jackson, Alyssa Wilmoth, Danny Gavigan, Bradley Smith, Tim Getman, Drew Kopis, Scott McCormick, Evan Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Glenn, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Tim Pabone, Thomas Keegan, and Johann Detweiler.
Matt Jensen brought his horse to a stop and smiled. He figured when the sign first went up, it read Hall Town, probably because the town's founder had been named Hall. But some wag crossed out the A and above it painted a somewhat shaky E, so the sign now welcomed travelers to Hell Town. Funny, Matt thought. The settlements didn't look very hellish. It looked like hundreds of other western cow towns. Tucked into a rugged region of Nevada, it was surrounded by rangeland that rolled up to the snow-capped mountains visible in the distance. It was pretty country in its way. Matt wondered how the hunting would be in those mountains. He was willing to bet the fishing would be good in the icy streams tumbling down from the heights. A few weeks of hunting, fishing, and just taking it easy sounded pretty good to him. He'd pick up some supplies in the settlement and move on.
Might spend a night here, sleep in a bed with a roof over my head for a change.
Though a young man, Matt Jensen's face bore the permanent tan of a man who spent most of his time outdoors. The slight squint around his pale blue eyes told the same tale. Those eyes had seen a lot. The frontier tended to grow an hombre up fast. Either that, or it killed him. The fact Matt had survived revealed a lot about him. So did the ease with which he carried the .44 double-action Colt on his right hip and the Bowie knife sheathed on his left. The stock of a Winchester .44-40 stuck up from a sheath strapped to his saddle. He rode a big sorrel and didn't have a pack horse. He traveled light by choice. Everything he owned he could find in his saddlebags or rolled up in the bedroll tied behind the saddle. That was the way of a wanderer. And Lordy, Matt Jensen had done some wandering in his life. A life he began with another name. Although he could never forget his murdered family, he considered his life to have really started on the day he met Smoke Jensen. Smoke raised the youngster called Matt, becoming both adopted father and brother to him, teaching Matt everything he needed to know to survive on the frontier, but more important, teaching him to be a man. So when it came time for Matt to strike out on his own, he took Smoke's last name with him. On his own, Matt learned and did a lot of things to make ends meet. Cowboyed a little, rode shotgun for various stage and freight lines, scouted for the army, cut trail for surveyors, guided wagon trains, anything to make a little money while not tying him down. Anything legal and honorable, that is. Smoke wouldn't have had it any other way, and Matt was the same. But always, always, the lore of the unknown called him on, tantalizing him with the prospect of what might be on the other side of the next hill or the next river. Those mountains in the distance, they were sirens singing to him. He would heed their summons as soon as he could, but they were mountains, he reminded himself, and they'd still be there tomorrow. As he rode into town, he noticed a large building under construction at the eastern end of the settlement. The frame and the rafters were up, but it didn't have any walls or roof yet. Judging by its size, shape, and placement in the community, it looked like a railroad station. But there were no railroad tracks running into Halltown.
Maybe a spur line's coming in.
The folks in town could know about it and be getting a jump on the depot. Often, the station went up before the steel rails ever reached the settlement. Matt reined the sorrel to a stop in front of Gibson's Mercantile. He swung down from the saddle and looped the horse's reins around the hitch rail. He had cast a thoughtful eye toward Temple's saloon as he passed it, but he told himself to deal with practical matters and buy supplies first. Once that was taken care of, he could wet his whistle. There might even be a pretty girl to flirt with. Now, he realized he didn't have to go to a saloon for that as he walked into the general store, which seemed empty of customers. Behind the counter stood a young woman who smiled at Matt as he approached. She had red hair, a scattering of freckles across her face, and brilliant green eyes.
Can I help you, sir?
Matt thumbed his hat back on his blonde hair and returned the smile.
Ah, that lilt in your voice tells me you're from Ireland, and a prettier Irish lass I've not laid eyes on in a long time. What's your name?
My name is Maureen Ferguson, for all the good it may do you. And 'tis only your eyes you'll be laying on me, good sir. And not even them if you don't stop being so bold about it. I've a good broom back here, and I don't mind using it to sweep trash out of my store.
She was smiling, but Matt had no doubt that she meant what she said. The fire in her eyes attested to that.
I meant no disrespect, Miss Ferguson. It is Miss, isn't it?
'Tis. And to whom am I speaking?
She looked pointedly at his hat. Matt reached up and took off the Stetson, holding it in front of his blue bib front shirt.
My name's Matt Jensen. It's an honor and a pleasure to meet you, Miss Ferguson.
Jensen? That's a Scandahoovian name, isn't it?
So they say. I've never been any closer to Norway or Sweden than Kansas, where I was born. I'm afraid I haven't seen as much of the world as you have.
World travel is vastly overrated. At least it is when you have to travel in steerage. I much prefer Nevada. At least I did.
Matt wanted to ask her what she meant by that, but before he could do so, she brightened again.
Now, what can I do for you?
I need some supplies.
I'm not surprised. You have the look of a man who's just passing through. Flour, sugar, salt, coffee, maybe some beans and bacon?
Yes, ma'am. A couple weeks' worth of each, I reckon.
That I can do. I'll put the order together. Can you come back in about an hour?
I'll do better than that. I'm going to be spending the night here, so there's no rush. I'll just come by in the morning and pick the things up when I'm ready to ride out.
That'll be fine, if you're sure it won't inconvenience you.
Not at all.
He gestured towards his clothes, which were coated with a fine layer of trail dust.
I think I'm going to get a hotel room, clean up a little, and try to act civilized for a night. Can you recommend a hotel?
Of course. The Ferguson Hotel.
Same name as yours?
My Uncle Colin owns it, as well as this mercantile.
The sign says Gibson's.
'Twas Mr. Gibson who started the store. My uncle bought it from him several years ago and didn't see the need to change the name. The Fergusons are not vain people.
Evidently not.
Matt put his hat on and gave the brim a tug.
I'm obliged to you for the help. If you want to figure out what the bill will be, I'll be glad to go ahead and pay you.
That won't be necessary. You can pay when you pick up the supplies in the morning.
All right, thanks.
He gave her a friendly nod. He wanted to tell her that he had enjoyed the flirting, but he decided she'd probably think that was a mite too bold. She might take that broom after him yet, and he didn't want that. As Matt turned and walked up the aisle toward the double front doors of the mercantile, he saw three men coming into the store. The one in the lead was built like a mountain, tall and broad. He appeared sort of a dandy, wearing boots with fancy stitching on them, tight whipcord trousers tucked into those boots, an expensive shirt with mother-of-pearl snaps instead of buttons, and a cream-colored Stetson that looked like it had never seen much mud or sun. The only well-worn thing about the man was the butt of the revolver that stuck up from the holster on his hip. Matt disliked the hombre on sight. But he wasn't looking for trouble, so he moved easily to the side of the aisle as if he were looking at the overall stacked on the shelves. He gave the big gent and the man's hard-faced companions a curt nod as they passed. The sneer on the big man's face told of his assumption that Matt had stepped aside out of fear. He also seemed to believe that that was his due. Matt had a good mind to point out to him just how wrong he was, but he wasn't looking for trouble, and he continued toward the door. He stopped when he heard the fear in Maureen's voice.
What are you doing here, Mr. Tally? My uncle told you he didn't want your business.
People don't tell me when they want my business, Maureen. I tell them when I'm going to give it to them, and I've asked you before to call me Judd.
Are you here to give me some business, Mr. Tally?
I reckon you could call it that.
Matt's jaw tightened until a muscle jerked.
By God, that's enough!
Like panthers, the two smaller gunmen whirled toward him. They reached for their guns, and Matt was ready to hook and draw. He figured he would have to kill him fast to minimize the danger of Maureen getting hit by a stray bullet. But before anybody could clear leather, Judd was between his friends and Matt, holding out his hands in a placating gesture.
Hold it, boys, hold it! No need for gunplay here!
Or maybe it was just a matter of, if anybody was going to show off, it was going to be him. Matt watched all three closely. If any of them made a move, he intended to burn powder.
Did you have something you wanted to say, friend?
Judd Tally hooked his thumbs behind his gun belt.
You heard me. I said that's enough. Miss Ferguson doesn't want you here, and where I come from, a man doesn't talk like that to a lady.
Where you come from? Where's that?
Colorado.
That was where Smoke Sugarloaf Ranch was located, and the ranch was as close to a home as Matt had. Smoke and his wife Sally and the old mountain man called Preacher were the only people in the world Matt considered family.
Well, you're not in Colorado anymore, and around here I say and do as I please. You better remember that if you don't want to get hurt.
One of the other men straightened up.
Yeah, you don't know who you're bracing, Saddle Tramp. This here is Judd Tally.
Sorry, I can't keep track of every cheap two-bit gunman west of the Mississippi.
Judd's contemptuous grin vanished. He lost his casual stance and squared up toward Matt. Matt knew he had pushed the confrontation right back into being a shooting matter. He didn't regret it, though. He had seen dozens of men like Judd Tally. They were a blight on the western landscape. Before things could go any further, Maureen Ferguson came out from behind the counter.
Stop it! Stop it, you fools! I won't have anybody dying in here!
Judd nodded toward the street.
What say we take this outside, Colorado?
Fine by me.
He had just stepped onto the high porch in front of the mercantile when a pair of hard metal rings pressed against his back. Even through his shirt, he knew the twin muzzles of a shotgun when he felt them. He stiffened. If both barrels of that scattergun went off, they'd blow him in two, literally.
You keep backing, mister. Just keep backing and keep your hand away from that gun.
Matt had no choice but to do as the shotgun wielder commanded. The man sounded tense and nervous, even scared. And that was a mighty bad combination in a man who had a grainer against your back.
Take it easy.
Matt took a couple more steps backward. He kept his hands well away from his body.
That's far enough.
Judd Tally and his friends came out of the store.
What are you doing, Sheriff? This ain't none of your business. Just stay out of it.
Oh, no, sir. Any blood spilled in my town is my business. When somebody told me there was fixing to be a shootout in Gibson's store, I hustled right down here.
It's just some blasted saddle tramp. Nobody give a damn if I kill him.
No killing.
Even armed with a shotgun, the lawman was a little afraid of Judd and the other two hard cases.
You and your pards just go on now, Judd.
What about that smart-mouthed drifter?
Judd gestured toward Matt.
I'll lock him up for disturbing the peace, all right?
Maureen had followed the men out of the store.
That's not fair, Sheriff. Mr. Jensen didn't do anything except chastise these hooligans for being disrespectful to me.
A crowd was gathering on the boardwalks on both sides of the street. Any potentially violent fracas always brought gawkers out of the woodwork in frontier settlements. From the corner of his eye, Matt saw one man separate himself from the crowd and walk quickly across the street toward the general store. The man moved awkwardly with a limp and he used a cane. Even so, he didn't waste any time.
It sounds to me, Sheriff, like it's Tully and his bully boys that you should be arresting. They were harassing my niece, and I won't stand for it.
Dadgummit, Mr. Ferguson. Don't get mixed up in this.
I already am. That's my niece, and they were in my store.
I'm not going to arrest Judd and his parts. Wouldn't do no good. You know Mr. Longacre just bail him out and pay any fine the judge levied against him.
And I know that Judge Hiram Dunwoody, venerable jurist that he is, would probably just dismiss this case with a stern warning, seeing as those men work for Cyrus Longacre. All right, then. Don't arrest anyone. Just order the combatants to disperse.
Judd threw his hands in the air in disgust.
God, this is stupid. All you people do is talk. It makes my head hurt. Come on, boys. Let's get back out to camp.
He stalked to the end of the porch, stomped down the stairs to the street, and went to a hitch rack in front of the next building. His steely-eyed companions followed him.
You gonna let them go when they're the ones who caused the trouble, Sheriff?
Dang right I am. That way nobody gets killed, including you and me.
The three men mounted up, Judd onto a silver-decorated saddle on a magnificent black, big enough to support his weight. He galloped out of town with the other two following him. As soon as they were gone, the crowd started to break up.
You can take that shotgun out of the poor man's back now, Sheriff Sanger.
All right.
The sheriff lowered the twin muzzles.
But I don't want no more ruckuses around here.
You should tell that to Cyrus Longacre and his gun wolves.
Matt turned and saw a round-faced, middle-aged man with a drooping mustache wearing a star.
What's your name, mister?
Matt Jensen.
And what brings you to Helltown? I mean, Halltown.
Just passing through. I'm on my way to the mountains. When I saw there was a settlement here, I thought I'd pick up some supplies.
Well, get them and get gone. We don't need no saddle tramps in town stirring up trouble.
Matt could tell that Sanger knew good and well who started the trouble. The lawman was just trying to hang on to a shred of self-respect by blaming Matt for it, since he had let the real culprits go.
Mr. Jensen was planning to spend the night, Sheriff. He was about to go over to Uncle Colin's hotel and rent a room.
Well, I can save you the trouble. The best room in the house is yours, Mr. Jensen, at no charge. I'm Colin Ferguson.
Matt Jensen.
Matt shook hands with the lean man who wore a look of sardonic humor on his face below a thatch of graying dark hair.
But I should warn you, by extending your hospitality to me, you risk offending that fellow Longacre, whoever he is.
The day I worry about offending Cyrus Longacre is the day you can box up my remains and ship me back to County Cork. Come along, lad. I'll see that you're well taken care of. What would you say to a tub full of hot water to soak away the dust of those long trails you've obviously been riding?
I'd say it sounds like a slice of heaven.
He was right about that. Hot water and soap went a long way toward making Matt feel human again. After he dried off, he put on the one change of clothes he owned. Colin Ferguson had promised to have the dirty garments cleaned at the Chinese laundry down the street. Circling back on his earlier notion of having a drink, Matt went downstairs from his room on the second floor of the solidly built frame and stone hotel. Colin Ferguson stood in the lobby, and it quickly became apparent that he'd been waiting for Matt.
Come back to my office and have a drink with me, Mr. Jensen.
I was just about to head over to the saloon.
Ah, my whiskey is better than any of that who hit John you'll get over there.
It's a hard offer to turn down.
Then don't. Come along. And as added incentive, I'll tell you all about what sort of hornet's nest you've stepped into by making an enemy out of that brute Tally.
All right. Thanks. And call me Matt.
All right, I will. I'm Colin.
They went through a door at the end of the registration desk and along a short hallway to Ferguson's simply furnished but comfortable office. Ferguson waved Matt into a red leather chair and moved to sit behind the desk. Taking a bottle and a couple of glasses from one of the drawers, he poured drinks for both of them.
Sláinte.
Ferguson and Matt lifted their glasses.
To your health.
Matt enjoyed the smooth fire of the liquor.
I got the idea Tally works for this Cyrus Longacre you mentioned.
That's right. He's Longacre's chief troubleshooter, and by that I mean...
Anything troubles Longacre, Tally shoots it.
That's exactly right, my boy. Tally's a hired gunman. And don't let the fact that he's such a hulking brute fool you. He's fast on the draw. He doesn't have to demonstrate that fact very often, though. He's so big that mostly he just pounds his opponents or cows them into going along with what he wants.
I've seen men like him before. They can be whittled down to size.
Well, not by the likes of the men we've got around here. Halltown has always been a pretty peaceful place.
I saw the signs outside town.
Helltown, you mean? I suspect that was the work of Roscoe Goldsmith, one of our local attorneys. Roscoe thinks he's funny, you see, especially when he's in his cups, which he frequently is. Tally was angry when he saw the sign and was going to tear it down, but Longacre ordered him to leave it alone. I think it appeals to Longacre's twisted sense of humor. Either that, or he thinks it functions as a warning for people not to cross him.
You still haven't told me who Longacre is.
That's right, I haven't. He's become such a dominant figure around here in the past 6 months. It's easy to forget that not everyone knows who he is.
Ferguson leaned forward and clasped his hands together on the desk.
Longacre is the railroad, and the railroad is Longacre. He owns it, lock, stock, and barrel.
The railroad that's coming to Halltown, you mean?
You know about that.
I saw the building going up at the edge of town and thought it looked like a depot. I take it there's a spur line coming up this way from the Union Pacific, and Longacre owns it.
That's right. The line is under construction now, and it's supposed to be here in a month or so. After that, Longacre plans to extend it even farther toward the mountains, into all the rich rangeland between here and there. He has a problem, though.
What's that?
Paiutes.
I thought the Paiutes were pretty much friendly these days. Haven't heard anything about them being on the warpath.
They're not. This particular bunch has signed a treaty, and they're trying to abide by it. The agreement gave them the land for several miles along either side of Big Bear Wash. It's not particularly good country, but the Paiutes seem satisfied with it.
Matt wasn't sure why Ferguson was telling him all this, but he gave in to curiosity.
Why is that a problem for Cyrus Longacre?
Big Bear Wash lies between here and the big stretch of rangeland where the finest ranches in this part of the state are located. If Longacre could extend his railroad line that far, he'd stand to make a small fortune. But he'd have to build a bridge over the wash in order to do that, because it would cost too much to go around.
And the Paiutes won't let him build it.
That's exactly right. Longacre sent surveyors and engineers to figure out the best way to handle the job, and some of the young Paiute warriors chased them off. A couple of days later, some of the elders from the tribe rode into town and hired Roscoe Goldsmith to file a motion in court, preventing Longacre's men from trespassing on their land to build his bridge. Judge Dunwoody ruled against them right away, of course, since he didn't want to cross Longacre. But Roscoe managed to contact Carson City by wire and got a lawyer friend of his to file an appeal with the federal courts before the telegraph mysteriously went dead.
Do you think Longacre had Tally pull down the wires to disable the telegraph?
Oh, I'd say it's highly probable. Longacre had to have an idea what Roscoe would do. That's where things stand now. The railroad is still headed this way, but where it goes from here is up to the carts.
It's an interesting story. What does it have to do with me?
Oh, I just wanted you to know what you're getting into by making an enemy of Judd Tally, and by extension, Cyrus Longacre.
Tally, maybe, because I stood up to him when he was bothering your niece. I don't have anything to do with Longacre, and unless Tally wants to follow me up to the mountains and interrupt my hunting and fishing, I'm done with him, too.
Unfortunately, Tally is liable to do exactly that, and Longacre will back him. You see, Longacre doesn't want anybody standing up to his men and getting away with it. They've come here, run roughshod over this town, done pretty much anything they've wanted, and cowed Sheriff Sanger and Judge Dunwoody into letting them get away with it. It's sheer arrogance is what it is. They do those things because they can.
Ferguson toyed with his glass.
Some of us here in Halltown would like to see a stop put to it. We're willing to do what it takes to make that happen.
Matt's eyes narrowed as he looked across the desk at the man.
Now I see what's going on. You want me to be your hired gun the same way Tally packs iron for Longacre.
I didn't say that.
But it's what you were driving at.
Again, Ferguson's shoulders rose and fell in a shrug.
It's clear you can handle yourself, Matt, and you're not afraid of Tally and those other gunmen who work for Longacre. Nobody else around here could say that.
I'm just one man. Going up against all of Longacre's men would be the same as suicide, wouldn't it?
I'm not so sure about that. I've got a hunch that if anybody could take on the whole lot of them and have a chance of coming out on top, it would be you.
I'm flattered, but I'm not a hired gun, Mr. Ferguson.
Colin.
Matt came to his feet.
I'm sorry, Mr. Ferguson. If you're making me an offer, the answer's no. I'm riding on in the morning. If you've changed your mind and want me to pay for my room tonight, I'll be glad to.
Ferguson waved away the offer.
No. You're welcome here for helping up my niece the way you did. Maureen and I are the only family we each have left, so she means a great deal to me. Actually, you're welcome to stay as long as you want. I'm in that much debt to you.
Consider it square anytime you want.
Matt gestured toward the empty glass on the desk.
Thanks for the drink.
Ferguson nodded, his disappointment plain. Halltown's main street was still busy. Cowboys from the large ranches in the area went in and out of the town's several saloons, restaurants, hash houses, gambling dens, and dance halls. Some of the houses at the edge of town were probably more unsavory establishments that also catered to the local ranch hands. Men came and went on horseback. Buckboards pulled up in front of Gibson's Mercantile and the other general stores in town. As afternoon wound down and evening came on, Halltown did not look like a place that had been buffaloed by a bunch of hired guns. Of course, Tally and his friends rode out earlier, so they weren't around to cause trouble. The townspeople and the punchers from the nearby spreads might be taking advantage of that fact.
Might be different later.
He wondered if the camp Tally had mentioned was the railroad construction camp.
Mr. Jensen?
Matt swung around. The voice belonged to a woman, and a mighty pretty one at that. The blonde woman stood before him, maybe 25 years old, Matt judged, and compactly built with an intriguingly curved shape, well displayed by the dark blue dress she wore, a near match for her eyes. A feathered hat of the same dark blue perched atop her blonde curls. Her lips curled in a smile as she looked at Matt. He had a feeling she was well aware of the way his eyes assessed her, and she did not mind one bit.
That's right. I'm Matt Jensen, Miss...
Barry. Virginia Barry. Why do you assume I'm unmarried, Mr. Jensen?
No wedding ring.
I'm wearing gloves.
They're tight enough that I think I'd see a ring through them. Am I right?
Smiling, Virginia tucked the bag under her arm and used her right hand to pull the glove off her left hand. Just as he had suspected, there was no wedding band on her ring finger. In fact, no jewelry of any kind decorated the slim, supple fingers.
You're a perceptive man, Mr. Jensen.
I try to be. Now that we've settled your marital status, Miss Barry, what can I do for you?
I'd heard you were probably staying at Mr. Ferguson's hotel. I looked you up so I could extend an invitation to you.
That took Matt a little by surprise. He didn't know Virginia Barry, or Hatton until a moment ago. He didn't know anyone in Halltown except Colin Ferguson and Ferguson's niece Maureen. Who else could be inviting him anywhere?
What sort of invitation?
For dinner.
With you?
I'll be there, but actually I'm delivering the invitation on behalf of my friend, Mr. Cyrus Longacre.
That really took Matt by surprise. So far, he had not heard anything good about Longacre, and the fact that an arrogant varmint like Judd Talley worked for Longacre was another mark against the man. But Matt had to admit he had not heard both sides of the story.
I'm not acquainted with Mr. Longacre. I'm not sure why he'd invite me to dinner.
Well, you weren't acquainted with me just a few minutes ago, were you? Mr. Longacre has heard about you, and he wants to meet you. And Cyrus is the sort of man who usually gets what he wants.
Her casual use of Longacre's first name told Matt quite a bit.
Where's this dinner going to take place?
In Mr. Longacre's suite at the hotel.
Matt turned his head to glance at the building he had just left.
No, not this hotel. The Sierra House. It's two blocks down on the other side of the street. You can't miss it.
Matt wasn't the sort to spend a lot of time brooding over a decision.
What time should I be there?
You're accepting?
I am.
Then we'll be expecting you at 7 o'clock. Good evening, Mr. Jensen.
Matt touched a finger to the brim of his hat.
Good evening, Miss Barry.
She turned and moved off along the boardwalk. Matt watched her go. And he would have been lying if he'd said he didn't enjoy the view.
Well, it won't hurt anything to let Longacre buy me a meal. Besides, I'll get to see Virginia Barry again.
Since there was a little more than an hour until he was supposed to show up at the Sierra House for his dinner engagement, Matt walked down the street to the livery stable where he had left his sorrel earlier. The old-timer who ran the place greeted him with a friendly nod.
I'm taking good care of your horse, son. You don't have to worry.
I'm not worried. Just thought I'd stop by for a minute.
Matt reached over the stall gate and patted the sorrel's shoulder.
Heard a lot of talk around town about this fella Cyrus Longacre. What do you think of him?
Matt knew that fellas who ran livery stables were often good sources of information about what went on in a town. They dealt with many of the citizens, and they saw most of the strangers who came and went as well. And when they were old-timers, like that one, he knew they generally had a hankering to talk. The short, wiry hostler grimaced, twisting up his weathered face in a look of distaste, like he'd just bitten into a rotten apple.
Longacre. Well, he's got a lot of money, I reckon, but that's just about the best thing I can say about him.
To some, that's all that would matter.
Not to me. Oh, I don't mind money. I wish I had more of it, but that ain't all that counts in the world. There's such a thing as being honorable, too.
You wouldn't describe Longacre as honorable?
You've met Talley. You reckon an honorable man would hire a skunk like that?
Can't always condemn a man just because of what his employees do.
Well, the first thing Longacre done when he come to town was to sick Talley on poor old Joe Dunaway.
Who's that?
He owned a freight line that ran betwixt here and Reno. Longacre tried to buy him out.
Why would he do that? Because Dunaway was competition?
That's right. The way I see it, Longacre thought he could buy the freight line and shut it down, so there wouldn't be no way to get goods up here for a while until the railroad rolls in. By that time, folks would be so desperate for a regular freight service again, they'd pay whatever Longacre wants for shipping things on his trains.
But he could have just waited until the tracks get here, undercut Dunaway's prices, and run him out of business that way.
It would have cost more, at least starting out, and would have taken longer. One thing about Longacre, son, and it doesn't take folks long to learn it. He wants what he wants, when he wants it, and how he wants it. He don't take kindly to anybody getting in the way of that.
That agreed with what Ferguson told Matt about Cyrus Longacre. It was starting to sound familiar. Matt had run into men like that before.
What happened with Dunaway and his freight company?
Joe told Longacre to go to hell. I reckon he knew he couldn't compete with the blasted railroad over the long run, but he was bound and determined to hang on as long as he could. Somebody jumped him one night, beat the hell out of him, and busted him up so bad he didn't have no choice but to go back east and live with his daughter and her family so they could take care of him. Longacre wound up buying a freight outfit after all, but he only gave Joe pennies on the dollar for what it was worth.
Suppose everybody thinks Judd Talley is the one who attacked Dunaway.
Joe said it was like a mountain fell on him. Ain't nobody else around here who's that big.
But the sheriff didn't do anything about it.
By that time, Walt Sanger had figured out it was in his best interest to go along with whatever Longacre wants, even if it ain't best for the town. Walt never was what you'd call real strict on the law, but he was always fairly honest, until Longacre and Tally scared it out of him.
Aren't you a little worried, talking about them like this? Whatever got back to him?
Son, you was ready to shoot it out with Tally, I was told. I don't figure you're pards with him and his boss.
No, I'm not. Longacre has a friend, Miss Barry.
Friend would be a polite word for what that gal is, and Lord forgive me for saying such an ungentlemanly thing.
She's a looker, though.
That she is, but looks don't count for much when you associate with the likes of Longacre.
Matt patted his horse's shoulder again.
What about Longacre's trouble with the Paiutes?
The dang fool's gonna wind up causing an Indian war if he keeps trying to push him off that land of theirs. It's theirs by rights. They signed a treaty and they've abided by it. If Longacre had tried to strike a deal with them, he might have been able to. But he figured since they was Redskins, he'd just take what he wanted.
You happen to know the chief?
I sure do. Fine old fella, name of Walking Hawk. Pretty fierce warrior in his time, I suspect, but now he just wants peace for his people. I don't know if Longacre's gonna let him have it.
Matt nodded. Everything he had heard about Cyrus Longacre was starting to remind him of something else. He wanted to learn more, though, before he sent a couple of wires. But he couldn't do that anyway, he reminded himself. The telegraph lines were down. Maybe they wouldn't stay that way. Western Union probably had a crew on their way to repair the line. As soon as the wires were humming again, Matt might have to get in touch with Smoking Preacher. A while back, the three of them had run up against a problem big enough that it took all their guns to settle it. The situation in Halltown was shaping up to look like it might be connected. If that turned out to be true, Helltown really was a better name for the place. Matt said goodbye to the old-timer and left the livery stable. He'd killed enough time that it was late enough for him to stroll toward the Sierra house. Earlier, he had told himself to be fair and give Longacre the benefit of the doubt. But after everything he had heard, he wasn't sure if he could do that. The Sierra house was as nice as the Ferguson Hotel. Well, maybe even a little nicer. That didn't surprise Matt. A rich man like Longacre wouldn't want to stay in a construction camp when there was a town nearby, and he would stay in the best place in that town.
Excuse me, I have an engagement with Cyrus Longacre.
You're Mr. Jensen?
That's right.
Miss Barry instructed me to tell you that you should go right up.
Obliged.
Matt went up the stairs. The door to Longacre's suite was indeed bigger and fancier than any of the others on the second floor. When the door opened, Virginia Barry stood there, a smile of welcome on her lovely face. Her hair swept down in two shining blonde wings, and she had traded the more sedate dark blue gown with its long sleeves and high neck for a pale pink dress that left her arms bare except for short, puffy white sleeves off her shoulders, and the dress's neckline dipped low enough to reveal the twin swells of creamy breasts.
Right on time, Mr. Jensen. Won't you come in?
It was an invitation most men would not be able to resist. Matt could have, if it were necessary. But after hearing so much about Cyrus Longacre, all of it bad, he wanted to meet the man for himself. As Matt removed his hat and stepped into the room, a man strode toward him, thrusting out a hand.
Mr. Jensen, it's good to meet you. I'm Cyrus Longacre.
The railroad man was a solid six-footer, with shoulders broad enough to indicate he'd done some physical labor in his life. His strong grip as he shook Matt's hand was more evidence of that. His face was broad and beefy, with a large nose and a slab of a jaw. Graying sandy hair topped his features. He wore a brown tweed suit, a snowy white shirt, and a silk cravat with a diamond stick pin in it. The pin was probably worth 10 times the value of Matt's belongings, including his horse and his guns.
Hello, Mr. Longacre.
Come in and have a seat. Virginia, if you'd be kind enough to pour us some brandy.
Of course. Mr. Jensen, won't you give me your hat?
Matt handed over the Stetson. He was glad she didn't ask him for his gun belt. He wouldn't have given that to her. Longacre moved him into a thickly upholstered armchair. Matt looked around as he sat down. They were in a spacious sitting room, furnished with several comfortable chairs, a divan, and a dining table covered with a white linen cloth and already set for dinner with crystal, silver, and fine china. A mahogany sideboard sat against one wall. The floor had a thick rug on it, and dark red velvet drapes with gold tasseled pull cords hung over the windows. Like most fancy hotel rooms, the place had an air of elegance about it, which was the main thing separating it from a sitting room in a high-class whorehouse. Longacre sat in a similar armchair on the other side of a spindly-legged table. He reached for a box made of some gleaming dark wood.
Cigar? I'm told they're rolled on the thighs of Cuban virgins.
No thanks, I'm not much of a smoker.
Your loss.
Longacre helped himself.
Thank you, my dear.
Virginia brought over a tray with 2 snifters of brandy on it. She handed one of them to Matt, and as she did so, her fingers pressed warmly against his for a moment longer than they had to.
To your health, Mr. Jensen.
Longacre raised his glass. Matt raised his in return and nodded, but he didn't say anything. Longacre took a sip of the brandy.
Oh, excellent. Much better than what you think you could get in a town like this, wouldn't you say?
I'm sure you had it brought in special.
That's true. Knowing that the creature comforts to which a man such as myself is accustomed would probably be sorely lacking here, I brought my own brandy, my own cigars.
He glanced at Virginia, who stood nearby with a smile on her face.
And other things I would need.
I'll go down and see about dinner while you gentlemen talk.
She set the tray back on the sideboard and left the room. Cradling the snifter in his left hand, Longacre leaned back in his chair and crossed his legs.
Shall we speak frankly, Mr. Jensen?
I'd rather you did.
I know you had a run-in with my man Tally earlier today.
That's true.
And it almost came to gunplay.
Seemed like it might.
Well, I'm very glad it didn't. I don't like it when my employees are forced to kill people.
You're assuming he would have beaten me to the draw.
Ah, judge, fast with a gun. Very fast.
Matt returned the smile.
Fast enough? We can't really say, can we?
By God, I like you, Jensen. You got the sort of confidence that reminds me of myself when I was a younger man. You wouldn't happen to be looking for a job, would you?
I don't think Tally would appreciate it too much if you would hire me.
Longacre's rugged face hardened again.
Ah, Judd appreciates what I pay him to appreciate. Trust me, if you sign on with me, well, there won't be any trouble with him.
What sort of work are we talking about?
Longacre set the empty snifter on the table next to the cigar box.
You probably heard that I'm bringing the railroad to Halltown. I plan to extend it farther north and west, all the way to the mountains. That's prime land up there, Jensen. Cattle, timber, mining. There are fortunes waiting to be made. Fortunes!
I believe it.
But whether it's cattle or lumber or gold and silver ore, it'll all need to be shipped. And that's where my railroad comes in.
I don't know anything about building a railroad. I can swing a sledgehammer, but that's about it.
I thought we were going to speak frankly. You know good and well what I need. I can get hundreds, thousands of men to swing sledgehammers and carry rails. I need men to cut through all the problems that rise up and get in my way.
That's what you have Tally and those other men for.
There are always losses in any campaign. And that's what building a railroad is like. A military campaign. The railroad advances and the enemy tries to stop it. You can never have too many good men when you're going into battle.
Longacre leaned back in his chair again, clearly satisfied that he'd had his say as Virginia returned.
Dinner is served, gentlemen.
The dinner announcement allowed Matt to postpone his next move.
We can finish our talk later, Jensen. Never allow business to interfere with a good meal, huh?
Words to live by.
The waiters served the food and wine and withdrew. Longacre held one of the chairs for Virginia, then took the one at the head of the table so she was seated to his right. Matt was at the other end of the table. The food was fairly simple. Thick steaks, potatoes, greens, all excellently prepared.
Well, not the sort of meal you'd get in New Orleans or San Francisco, but probably the best you can expect in a place like this.
Better than beans, bacon, and biscuits out on the trail. That's what I've been eating.
To tell the truth, he would have preferred one of those rough meals to sharing a table with Cyrus Longacre. Virginia Berry was a mighty pretty dinner companion, though, so he supposed he could put up with Longacre for a while. The wine was good, too, but Matt just sipped it. He'd already had that drink with Colin Ferguson and the brandy before the meal. He didn't want his brain to get muddled. He didn't trust Longacre, and he knew he needed to remain alert for some sort of trick. As he ate, Matt mused that Longacre appeared to have been sincere with that offer of a job. It was one way men like Longacre operated. Figure out who might provide some opposition and get those men on your side to start with. Matt, however, was not going to be fooled, and he was not going to be bought off. But it wouldn't hurt to pretend to play along until he was sure how much of a threat Longacre represented. When they finished with the meal, Longacre leaned back in his chair again and fired up another cigar.
Now that you've had some time to think about it, what do you say, Matt? How would you like to throw in with me? You won't regret it, I promise you.
Matt knew better. If he ever allied himself with a man like Longacre, he would never know another peaceful night's sleep. His dreams would be haunted by the way he had sullied himself. But he put a smile on his face.
I'd like to ponder it a little more, if that's all right with you, Mr. Longacre.
Matt saw the quick flash of anger in the railroad baron's eyes, but Longacre controlled the reaction almost instantly and managed to smile in return.
Of course. I don't want to rush you. But we don't take too long to make up your mind. Well, you know how opportunities are. They present themselves, and then they move on.
I'll let you know by tomorrow evening.
Well, that's fine.
Longacre got to his feet.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have some work I really need to tend to. I have one of the rooms in this suite set up as an office. Building a railroad is a complicated business, you know.
Sure, I understand.
Matt started to get up, too, but Longacre motioned him back into his chair.
No, there's still some wine in the bottle. Why don't you and Virginia finish it off at your leisure?
Yes, Mr. Jensen. Once Cyrus starts working, he's not very good company for the rest of the evening.
Curious as to what they were trying to do, Matt settled back in his chair.
All right, if you're sure.
I'm positive.
Longacre stepped over and stood behind Virginia's chair, leaning down to plant a kiss on her cheek.
Good night, my dear.
Good night, Cyrus.
Even as she spoke, her blue eyes remained on Matt. Longacre turned to Matt and held out his hand again.
It was a pleasure to meet you, Matt.
Likewise.
Matt shook with the man. Longacre went through one of the doors that opened off the sitting room and closed it firmly behind him, leaving Matt and Virginia alone. She reached for the bottle of wine.
Let me refill your glass.
Matt nodded his thanks, but took only a small sip. Virginia cradled her own glass in her hands.
So, Cyrus offered you a job?
That's right.
I thought he might. He was impressed when he heard about the way you stood up to Judd Tally.
I think that would make him mad since Tally works for him.
That's because you don't know Cyrus. He appreciates daring and resolve. When he looks at a man who's determined, it reminds him of himself.
He said pretty much the same thing to me. I'm not sure it would work out. I reckon Tally wouldn't be happy about it.
Judd Tally is an uncultured brute. He's a blunt instrument, nothing more. You don't have to worry about him.
I'm just a drifter, what most folks would call a saddle tramp. Not all that cultured myself.
Don't sell yourself short. I find you quite intriguing.
Virginia looked directly at him.
I hope you take that job.
Why?
She looked down at the table, and a faint rosy tinge crept over her face and neck.
Because it would mean I'd have a chance to see a lot more of you.
Matt stood up and came around the table toward her. She stood up to meet him, and when she raised her eyes to his, they had that bold fire in them again. He reached up and rested his hands on her shoulders, feeling the smooth warmth of her bare flesh under his fingers. She didn't resist at all when he drew her toward him, leaned down, and kissed her. All the passionate urgency he could have asked for was there as she sagged against him and her hands clutched at his broad chest. Her lips were warm and alive and compelled him to continue kissing her. She was so pliant, he had no doubt that he could have done anything he wanted with her. And it was all a lie. He knew that as well as he knew his own name. Virginia was just one more payoff from Cyrus Longacre, one more incentive not to take the opposing side in any trouble. If Longacre was that desperate, he must have plans looming that he believed might cause open warfare to break out across that part of Nevada. Matt was more convinced than ever that Longacre needed to be stopped.
I really ought to go.
You don't have to.
I'll be seeing you again.
Matt slipped out of her embrace.
After all, I promised Mr. Longacre I'd give him a decision by tomorrow night.
I hope it's the right one.
It would be, but it wouldn't be the one she and Longacre wanted. Leaving the rest of the wine where it was, he got his hat from the little table where she had placed it earlier. Virginia stood beside the table, the fingertips of her left hand resting on the snowy cloth, and her right hand pressed lightly to the valley between her breasts. Matt had to admit that she made a lovely picture. Most men wouldn't be able to walk away from her. It wasn't easy for him either, but he managed to smile.
Good night. Please pass along my thanks to Mr. Longacre for his hospitality.
Of course. Good night, Matt.
He got out of there while he could, easing the door closed behind him. Matt reached the Ferguson Hotel porch and paused to look across the street toward the Mercantile, which was closed for the night. The building was dark and locked up.
What the...
Something was wrong. Matt saw a brief, sudden flare of light through the window in one of the doors. Someone had struck a match inside the Mercantile. Matt did not hesitate. His instincts told him something was wrong, and he had learned smoke had taught him to trust his instincts. He loped quickly across the street toward the darkened Mercantile. He didn't head for the front door, which he was sure would be locked. If somebody was in there who wasn't supposed to be, as seemed likely, that person had probably gone in through the back. Matt hurried toward the alley that ran alongside the building. As he ran, he saw a flare of light from the corner of his eye and he paused for a second. He watched as a tongue of flame suddenly licked upward in the darkened store. That was all the evidence he needed to know what was going on. He palmed his Colt from its holster.
Fire! Fire in the mercantile!
Then, gun in hand, he plunged into the shadow-choked passage beside the mercantile. He dashed toward the rear of the building and reached the corner just as several dark figures spilled from an open back door. One of them looked big enough to be Judd Talley. There wasn't enough light for Matt to be sure. He brought up the .44.
Hold it!
A couple of the figures twisted toward him. Colt flame bloomed in the darkness, and Matt felt the wind rip of a bullet's passage close beside his ear. His own revolver roared and bucked in his hand as he swiftly triggered a pair of shots. That left the biggest of the trio, but he wasn't putting up a fight. He was running away. Matt was about to squeeze off a shot when the man abruptly disappeared around the far corner of the building. Matt grimaced and held his fire. There was no point. He had a more pressing problem. Those men had set a fire inside the mercantile, and it had already had a minute or so to catch hold. The smell of smoke was already thick in the air. Garish, flickering light from the flames spilled through an open doorway, revealing that he was in some sort of storeroom. He hurried through the door and found himself behind the counter. The floor in front of the counter was on fire. The reek of coal oil mingled with the choking, eye-stinging smoke. A stack of blankets sat on a shelf nearby. Matt grabbed one of them, shook it out, and started slapping at the burning floor with it. The man must have poured a pool of coal oil in front of the counter, so fiercely was it burning. And they had scattered more of the stuff around the store, but the flames hadn't reached the rest of the oil yet. If Matt could put out the fire, the mercantile might be saved. The fire kept trying to spread, and he kept beating it back.
Can we get a bucket brigade together?
We gotta get more folks to help.
Vaguely, Matt was aware of men shouting somewhere nearby.
Get back!
Matt paused in his efforts, and a man appeared beside him holding a bucket with water sloshing out of it. The man threw the water onto the flames, then handed the empty bucket to another man and took another one filled with water. Matt stepped back, blinking his smoke-irritated eyes, and watched as the quickly formed bucket brigade put out the blaze. Matt recognized Colin Ferguson at the head of the line. Ferguson's narrow face was set in grim lines, but when he saw Matt looking at him, he managed a quick smile.
Was it you who discovered this fire?
A couple of the men who started it are in the alley behind the store.
Ferguson's eyes widened in surprise.
You killed them?
I don't know. I got lead in them.
Matt went around the counter and through the door into the storeroom, drawing his gun as he did so. He heard footsteps behind him, and he looked around to see that Ferguson was hurrying after him.
I don't know if you ought to go back there, Mr. Ferguson. Those varmints might still be alive.
The third man, who Matt suspected had been Judd Talley, might have returned and be lurking around behind the store, but he didn't take the time to explain that.
I'm coming with you. Nobody sets fire to my store and gets away with it.
Making sure he stayed in front, Matt approached the rear door, which still stood open. He went through it in a crouch, sweeping his gun from side to side, ready to squeeze the trigger if anybody opened fire on him.
Are they still there?
Son of a...
The two huddled shapes he'd left on the ground were gone. Either the men had only been wounded and got up to stumble away, or someone else carried off the bodies while the battle against the fire went on.
They're gone.
Matt lowered his gun. With his other hand, he fished a lucifer out of his pocket and snapped it to life with his thumbnail. As the match flared up, it cast a flickering glow over the area behind the store. In its light, he saw two dark irregular patches on the ground he knew had to be blood.
You hit them, no doubt about that.
Ferguson stepped out of the building and came to stand beside Matt. Preacher and Smoke had taught Matt quite a bit about tracking. Experience taught him even more. He holstered his gun and hunkered on his heels as he studied the marks left in the dirt by several pairs of high-heeled boots.
Looks to me like one man picked up both of them and carried them off. Probably had horses hidden somewhere nearby.
It would take a strong man to do that.
Saw a third man, and he was plenty big.
Tally.
Had to be him. But I never got a good look at him, so I can't prove it.
Can't prove what?
As Matt looked up, Sheriff Walt Sanger stepped out of the store. The match had burned down almost to Matt's fingers. He dropped it and crushed it out with the toe of his boot.
Three men started that fire in the store, Sheriff. I shot a couple of them, but the third man got away. He came back and retrieved the bodies of his partners while I was inside trying to put out the fire. I'm convinced the third man was Judd Talley.
But you didn't really see him. I heard you say so yourself.
I saw him well enough to know how big he was. Nobody else but Talley fits that description.
I don't know. There are lots of pretty big hombres in Nevada.
Is there anybody that big around here?
Shoot, I don't know who might have ridden into these parts. You only showed up yourself today, mister, and already you've got mixed up in a heap of trouble. For all I know, you started that fire yourself. And now you're just making up some story about three other men because you almost got caught.
Ferguson stared at the lawman in flabbergasted amazement for a moment before he could speak.
Sheriff, you can't be serious. Look at the blood on the ground. That proves Mr. Jensen wounded two of the men.
Stubbornly, Sanger shook his head.
I see some dark spots on the ground. That don't prove nothing. Might not even be blood.
Oh, but...
Let it go. I don't think the sheriff is going to believe anything that might cast some of Longacre's men in a bad light.
Are you implying that I'm dishonest, Jensen?
No, Sheriff, I'm not.
Not implying. Matt was saying flat out that Sanger was a crook, or at least in the pocket of a crook. But forcing a confrontation with the lawman was not going to do any good. Matt wanted to look into a few more things, and once he had, then he would decide what steps to take next. One of the townies who'd been fighting the blaze in the store appeared in the doorway.
The fire's out, Colin. Doesn't look like the damage is too bad. You're going to have to replace some floor and maybe part of your counter.
Thanks, Roy. I'll come take a look.
Matt followed Ferguson inside, ignoring the baleful look Sanger gave him as he stepped past the lawman. In the mercantile's main room, a man was in the process of lighting a lantern.
Better be careful. Those varmints splashed around quite a bit of coal oil before they started the fire.
Yes, I can smell it.
Maureen Ferguson emerged from the crowd of volunteers and bystanders and approached Matt.
From what I hear, you saved the store. I can't thank you enough.
I just happened to see something going on in here that shouldn't have been. Anybody would have done the same.
No, they wouldn't have. It takes a lot of courage to run into a burning building.
The fire was pretty small when I got to it.
Which is after he'd gotten in a shootout with the skunks who started the blaze, I might add.
Is that true?
Well, the sheriff doesn't seem to believe it, but it happened.
Dear Lord, you could have been killed. Have you had supper? If not, I'm going to make sure you have the best meal you've had in months.
Sorry, I've already eaten.
Well then, breakfast tomorrow morning in the hotel dining room. I'll see to it.
That sounds mighty nice.
Maureen turned to Ferguson.
Uncle Colin, you're putting him up in the best room in the house, aren't you?
Of course, my dear. After what he did for you earlier, I felt like he deserved it, and that goes double now.
The crowd began to disperse. Sheriff Sanger clumped out of the store, still casting unfriendly glances over his shoulder toward Matt. It wasn't long before Matt, Ferguson, and Maureen were the only ones left.
Maureen, Matt thinks it was Judd Talley and a couple of Longacre's men who started the fire.
Probably the two who were with Talley earlier.
But why? Simply because of the trouble here?
That's reason enough for the likes of them. And you know how Talley gets when anybody tries to stand up to him.
Yes, I do. And you say they shot at you, Mr. Jensen?
Don't worry, I shot back at him. I winged the other two, but not Talley. He carried them off while I was in here trying to keep the fire from spreading.
Do you think they'll come back?
After what happened, it's not likely they'd make another try, especially tonight. But it might be a good idea for somebody to stay here and keep an eye on things, just in case. I can do that.
You've already done more than enough. I'll stay myself.
I'm not sure that's a good idea, Uncle.
I plan to have a loaded shotgun in my lab and plenty of shells close at hand. Anybody who comes messing around here, bent on mischief, will soon regret it, that I can promise you.
The hotel's right across the street. I can spell you later on.
Won't be necessary.
Are you used to staying up all night and standing guard?
Well, no.
Then it won't hurt to switch off. I'll get some sleep and be back later.
All right, I won't argue with you. But sing out before you come in, just to be sure I don't get nervous while I'm holding that shotgun.
The rest of the night passed quietly. When Matt returned to the hotel after spelling Ferguson the next morning, Maureen stood waiting for him. She led him into the dining room, where a table was already set for him with platters of flapjacks, bacon, and eggs, along with a pot of strong black coffee. The table was actually set for two, so Matt wasn't surprised when Maureen joined him for breakfast. The food and coffee revitalized him, and the company put a smile on his face.
Nothing else happened at the store during the night.
I guess we'll have to be closed for a few days while Uncle Colin has all that damage repaired.
Does that mean you won't have to work during that time?
Oh, I'm sure I'll need to go help my uncle to go through the stock and weed out the goods that were damaged by smoke or coal oil. Why do you ask, Matt? What did you have in mind?
Well, I thought I might do some riding in the country around here. I wouldn't mind having a pretty girl show me around.
She returned his smile and blushed.
That sounds very enjoyable. When would you like to start?
Whenever it would be convenient for you.